Live and festive in the Publix Holiday Headquarters studio at WSB.
It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. It's brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
It's 7:07 on a Saturday morning, 35.8 degrees outside. And yes, sir, Rebab Bobcat, we are alive on the on New Year's Eve, as we were on Christmas Eve, too. The Lawn and Garden Show soldiers on. Ashley Frasca, Clint Reed is here, and we are doing the Lawn and Garden Show, as will Dave Baker a little bit later on today. And we will have live programming this morning on News Talk WSB. Our number is 404-872-0750. If you have a garden question about anything that's green and growing or brown and not growing or animal control or anything that just particularly piques your interest about the outdoors and what can be done about it to help you be more successful. Again, 404-872-0750. First in line is Dale in Kennesaw, who wants to know a little bit about bluebirds this morning. Hey, Dale, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Well, how can I help, Dale?
Well, the warden loves birds in the springtime, and she's wanting to attract some bluebirds.
Oh, yeah.
I went online, and I got some plans on building some bluebird houses, and I've heard that you can tie blue ribbon around trees or poles or whatever to attract them, mealworms, but I didn't know if you had any super ultimate suggestions on attracting them.
Yeah, I've got one big one, and that is the siding of the nest boxes that you're going to build. And you can't put them in the woods. They're not going to really be attracted to nest boxes in the woods. They need to be on the edge of a large grassy area is the best place to put a bluebird house.
Our house backs up to a small patch of woods. We don't have a lot of flat area. That was something I also read on the online, but yeah. So just open, and does the blue ribbon help any?
Yeah, I don't know if it does or doesn't. It's not a bad thing to do, I guess, but I'm not a bluebird per se expert, but I know the sighting is the thing that really makes or breaks where the bluebirds come. And you don't want to put a bunch of bluebird houses together because they're pretty territorial, and so if you put five within 50 feet of each other, they all fight with each other for who gets to live in which house. So the houses need to be spread apart. So if you have one or two or three, maybe, depending on how much space you have, that works. It works out best for me, it seems like. Oh, you know, I got one more thing to do, Dale. One of the problems that you will or maybe will have, I have had it half a dozen times so far, is that bluebird houses are particularly attractive to flying squirrels. Flying squirrels think, boy, that is a great place to spend the winter. And then even during the springtime, they'll dig into the hole and drive the bluebirds out, and the flying squirrels will take up residence in your bluebird house. And one of the ways to prevent that is, I don't know if you have any handyman experience with this, Dale, but if you go to one of the big box hardware stores and look for metal cover plates that have a round hole in the middle, they're specifically designed for a particular kind of round outlet, but the holes are about an inch and a half or so, a little bit more maybe, in diameter. And if you screw that over the hole in your, or the wooden hole in your wooden bluebird box, it's just perfectly sized for a bluebird to go in and out, and it's metal so the flying squirrel can't chew the hole out and make the bluebirds go away. So that's a thing that I've learned and done, and has worked perfectly in my bluebird houses.
One more question. What's the best time to put the houses out?
They start migrating in mid to late February. You won't see many of them, but they're around. There'll be a few out in mid-February, March, a few more come in. And they've established territory. April, they've sort of started thinking, this is where I want to live, and I'll start building a nest, and we'll have Mama in here in a little bit, and she'll lay some eggs. We'll have some little bluebirds in here. You mentioned mealworms a while ago, Dale, and they are really, really attractive to bluebirds. The mealworms, what I've done in a couple of places is I made a little platform outside of my bluebird house. I have a plastic, it's basically a plastic pot saucer that I attach to a piece of metal and screw that to the bottom of the house. And every day or two or three, I'll put a little half a handful, 5 or 10 mealworms in there. And that surely brings the bluebirds in. They do love those mealworms.
And so about an inch and a half hole is as big as I need to go with the for the bluebird.
If you go online, they'll have a specific diameter that is the best, quote unquote, for bluebirds, and use that as a template, and then use that metal cover over the top.
I'll do it, sir. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, enjoy them. The bluebirds are really, really beautiful birds, Dale. If you have the right place and the right size hole and everything like that, you'll have a really lot of enjoyment for seeing them.
I appreciate it.
Drive safely. We'll see you soon, Dale. Terry joins us from Lawrenceville. Hey, Terry. Morning.
Hey, good morning, Walter. I love your show.
Well, thank you.
I have a 5-foot and a 2-foot white walnut tree that I want to transplant from where they are to a different location in my yard, and I have no idea what's the best soil and best time to do it and what I need to do once I do a transplant.
One of the things about walnut trees is that they have initially a pretty long taproot in proportion to the top of the tree. So you may have that 2-foot one that you have. It may have a taproot that's 18 inches long that goes down deeply. And if you damage the taproot, they don't much like that. I don't know why it is, but they just sort of sit and don't grow much for the next couple of years as they regrow the root system around the taproot. So one of the things to remember, if you're going to dig one up, Terry, is to dig it deeply. Get way underneath there and dig and dig and find, identify the taproot with your fingers and dig it up as best you can without much damage to it. And as far as the soil they like to grow in, it's like most trees. They want loosened soil the roots can spread out into pretty quickly, and you have to have a deep hole in the middle for the taproot to be slipped into. Beyond that, full sun, you know, spread out the roots as you plant it. Not much fertilizer when you plant, but maybe next spring you can put a little bit on it, and you got a black walnut.
Okay, when's the best time to transplant it?
Today. This afternoon, tomorrow afternoon, it'd be a good time.
Okay, great. All right, thank you so much.
Wait. I got a question here. Why are you transplanting the black walnut? What's the story on this?
It's right next to another large black walnut, and I just want to spread them out.
Do you have any kind of vision of having to eat or going to eat the black walnut meat?
No, sir.
That's best. If you've ever tried to get the nut meat out of a black walnut, you know it will make you say very, very ugly words, and you won't get much to eat anyway. So that's a nice shade tree, has nuts, you know, and things. You can talk about that. But don't expect to get any black walnut meats unless you really, really are obsessive about the whole deal.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right, Terry. Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. 14 minutes past the hour, and Mike's up and coming. Mike joins us on Lawn and Garden. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Walter. How are you doing this morning?
All right, Mike, what can I do for you?
Well, I put a raised garden in about, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And the first year, the tomatoes got real spindly and real tall, as did the green peppers. And I thought, oh, what the heck, you know, maybe it's because, you know, the first year or whatever. But last year it did the same thing. I mean, the tomatoes get to be 6.5 feet tall, and the peppers are abnormally tall, and very little, a few peppers and a few tomatoes. And
yeah.
I don't know if the pH is wrong or what I need to do.
When they grow tall and spindly like that, it describes to me possibly over-fertilization. When you put a little too much fertilizer, that's what they do. The nitrogen stimulates a lot of upper growth without a lot of slowing down to put flowers and put fruit on. Is that a possibility?
Well, I bought, when I filled the bed up, I used some soil that was already had fertilizer in it from, you know, one of the main companies. Yeah. And, and I don't know, maybe that's what it is. And, if I took some of that out and put regular soil in, I mean, or should I put peat moss or?
Well, by this time, all that fertilizer from the pre-fertilized potting soil, that's all washed away. So you don't have to worry about having too much. And usually that's not too much, the part that's in the fertilizer or the part that's in the soil when you put the soil in place last year. Usually it's, and I'll just come out and say it, we call it Miracle-Gro disease. People who put Miracle-Gro on there about every 3 weeks, you know, more and more and more and more. And the tomato gets taller and taller and taller, and there's still no fruit on it because they put more and more Miracle-Gro on it. So,
The only thing I used was some Epsom salts, but that was it. I didn't put any other fertilizer on at all.
Okay, that and Epsom salt does not stimulate upper growth either. They're in the full sun, right? Am I?
Yes.
Okay, good. I've exhausted all my theories for you then, Mike.
Just keep trying, huh?
Yeah, keep trying. You know, gardening, I've heard a phrase I really like. I think about this all the time for the last couple of weeks. It is, like I said, all I'm trying to do is learn to think about the world from a plant's point of view. And so somehow your tomato did not get quite the information or the view of the world that it needed in order to fruit. And you have to think of what does the tomato, what is it thinking about when I put it in the ground in April? How can I make the world better for my tomato plant? That's okay. That's the secret. And the only way you figure that out is try again.
Well, you know, the raised bed is, you know, next to the house and that. Could it be getting too hot there maybe?
Yeah.
Because the sun reflecting off the house?
Yeah, possibly, but man, it'd have to be right up against the bricks of the house to be way too hot. If it's at least three or four feet away, I would think that's not a issue.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll call you next year.
All right. Anytime, Mike.
All right,
man.
Thank you very much.
We'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Coming up in the next half hour, Barbara has a particular problem. Barbara, don't you go away because I have the solution for you. It's 7:18 and we'll be back after this.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. We'll be covering breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts through the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Now back to Walter Reeves, the lawn and garden advice you need.
I've seen trouble all my day. I bid farewell to old Kentucky.
Oh, we like this song.
The place where I was born and raised.
Quick weather update brought to you by Ackerman Security. 50 is the high today. Rain probably moving in around mid-afternoon, 2 or 3 o'clock this afternoon. And the low overnight in the mid-30s like it is right now, 35.6 degrees at News Talk WSB. Your full weekend forecast comes up in 10 minutes on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Barbara is in Buckhead and has a particular problem this time of year. Hey, Barbara, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How can I help?
Well, other than coming up with the Pied Piper of Hamelin and paying him to get rid of these rats.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you've got any suggestions. We're going for the world record on on capturing them.
Are they in the attic or outside or in a shed, indoors? Where's
they're on the roofs. They're finding their way into the crawl space to come down the walls. So we've spent a lot trying to find access points and getting those secured. But they're very intelligent animals.
Yes, they are. There's no smarter, more devious creature than a Norwegian rat. A roof rat can get in just about any place, it seems like. And it's not a one thing does the whole job that I can tell you the magic wand to get rid of them. But you've already started on one of the three things you have to do, and that is to seal every bit of access you can possibly find. They can come underneath gutters. If your gutters run the length of the roof, sometimes there are gaps between the gutter where it's hung and the roof decking, and they can get up under through that. So somehow that has to be sealed around a roof. The fans, if you have a fan that ventilates your attic, that's another place that sometimes the screen wire there can come loose pretty easily. It rusts and falls apart, and the roots just scamper, or the rats can scamper off the roof and get into through the attic, through the attic ventilation. If there's any access from a shrub, like a friend of mine had a camellia shrub that was tall enough that it could reach up to the louvers that went into the attic space, and the rats were just climbing up the camellia shrub and over into the louvers, and there they were in the attic. So far, so good. So one thing, yeah, you're right. You got to eliminate access. Number two, traps, and not one, not two, but half a dozen easily, if not 10 traps set in the attic and checked regularly enough. I know that's a pain in the rear to do, to get up in the attic and check the darn things, but it needs to be checked because otherwise you'll have a dead rat and that's not going to be fun for New Year's Eve. So check the rats in the crawl space, put three or four down there, three or four in the attic, and check them regularly and see if you catch any rats that way. If you care to put baits out, there are only, I think now, two brands of bait that you can put out. One is the green waxy block that's made by Tomcat. And I see that it has a little bait station. You do not ever, ever want to put that in a place where a pet or a child could get in contact with it, because it is real poisonous to dogs particularly. So the little green Tomcat bait blocks, they usually come with a dispensing station that is pet-proof, child-proof. You put it in two or three of those in your attic and in your basement. And then there's the Rat-X, R-A-T-X, Rat-X, which is a pelleted kind of stuff and has the active ingredient actually of salt, sodium chloride, because rats will eat it and they cannot vomit. They cannot bring the material back up again, so it dehydrates the rat. Not the most great way for an animal to die. I hate to wish any bad things on a rat, but you know, if that works, it works. So you got the two rat bait products, you got the bait, the traps themselves. Be sure and put the traps, by the way, in places where the rats run. Usually that's along the base of a wall, not out in the middle of the attic, but against the base of a wall or against some place that you can see they might have been active, where you can see the droppings and that sort of thing. Eliminate access. And hopefully by end of January, you can call me back, Barbara, and say, hey, no more rats for the last 3 weeks. This is awesome. So
okay, it'll be a grand celebration. That's
it
for
will
sure.
be a grand celebration, because there's nothing more miserable than hearing the rat not being able to get to it somehow. Get him out of the attic. Get him out of here. We don't want rats around here. No way, no way. So hopefully you'll have success with those three things, Barb. Thanks so much for calling. It's 728. We'll be back to more Lawn and Garden right after news.
Live and festive in the Publix Holiday Headquarters studio at WSB.
It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. It's brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
It's 7:35 on a Saturday morning, 36 degrees outside. This is the Lawn and Garden Show, live in person right here at News Talk WSB. Yes, it is the day before New Year's, and we are here broadcasting the Lawn and Garden Show. My number, 404-872-0750. David is in Atlanta, and David joins us on Lawn and Garden. David, good morning.
Roll Tide, Walter.
Roll
how are you?
Roll Tide. Mickey Gasway will be here in a little bit. Lord, she's excited about this game, David.
My wife's going crazy.
So what's up?
I've got cinnamon ferns all over the back of my property. And, you know, every spring come March, the whole frond thing in the middle comes up.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to trim the bush. Do I take it all down and let the new fronds come up and become the new plant, or do I trim around the base and get rid of the old dead stuff but keep the primary body?
By January, everything is going to be brown and dead. You just cut everything down. Cut it down to 2-3 inches maybe from the ground, and zzz, away it goes. No need to keep anything. It's all dead.
Okay. And by the way, I got bluebirds on the property now.
Ooh,
and they're doing great.
Very nice. Yeah, some of them will overwinter. Some migrate out and go down south to Florida. But, yeah, it's not unusual for bluebirds to be on a property. You can feed them muffins. I've heard of people putting corn muffins out for them, a little bit of fruit, a little bit of mealworm here and there to keep the bluebirds happy during the wintertime.
Yeah, they're beautiful this time of year.
You know, one of the things, David, I want you to try, you got all the cinnamon ferns, so I know what kind of environment you have. Look around for ostrich fern at nurseries around town. And if you
ostrich.
Ever have a chance to buy an ostrich fern, do that. And the reason I'm saying you ought to do it, not only are they kin to each other, they're like the same environment for growing, but on an ostrich fern, when the fronds first come out, those little fiddleheads first come out in the spring in the warm days of late March, you can pop them off and eat them. They're edible, friable, you know, stir-fried,
really?
Things like that. So up in Maine and the Northeast, they can them. Heck, they can them. They harvest them, can them, sell them fresh at farmers markets and things like that. And then you call me back and tell me about how they taste. They're supposed to taste like asparagus a little bit. So,
and you know. Any idea about a source?
No. I don't see them at Pike all that much. It might be some at Atlanta Water Gardens. Cheshire Bridge,
yeah,
maybe
yeah,
Randy's Perennials out in Lawrenceville.
Okay, thank you, sir. Merry Christmas, or Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you too, David. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye. Comes now Miss Phyllis in Hampton, Georgia, who joins us on Lawn and Garden. Phyllis, hey, good morning.
Good morning and Happy New Year, and thank you for being a part of my Atlanta listening family. I am descended from generations of Atlantans, and you are so appreciated. And I apologize, my exuberant boxer mix is barking in the background.
Where did you grow up, Phyllis? Let's start by where
I grew up in the Virginia. I grew up in the Virginia Highland area of Atlanta. I went to Inman. At that time, it was Inman Elementary School,
right.
And my parents lived in this sleepy little bungalow neighborhood in the Virginia Highland area,
That's
and
exactly.
that was where I grew up.
You went to Grady High School
after that.
A very
happy life. I sure did. And later Georgia State and University of Pennsylvania, and Emory, and back here, and now I've been residing in a subdivision in Hampton for the last many, many years of my life. And my question for you is this: when is the best time for me to plant compact Nandina bushes along the front of my house?
I have a specific answer and additional information for you. Right?
Thank you.
The specific information is right now. This is a great time to plant Nandinas and shrubs of any kind, whether it's holly or gardenia or what have you. Doesn't matter. Now is a great time to do it when the soil is coolish but not terribly frozen and there's a little occasional warm, sunny days out. Nandina, happy as a clam. They can be just fine. The additional information, though, Phyllis, is Ashley brought a picture in on her phone. Ashley is one who takes pictures of everything she wants to ask me about on Saturday on her phone. And so we have a little session every Saturday morning where she says, well, what is this? And why is this? And what happened here? And she had a picture of the compact Nandina just today. It had a pretty red color, gorgeous, gorgeous plant.
Yeah.
And she said, why did they plant these Nandinas separately from each other about 5 feet? They look like little red muffins in the landscape. And I said, because somebody dumb put them out there. They should be in a mass. They should be in front of other background green shrubs perhaps, but they look a lot better in a mass than planted like little lone red soldiers in the landscape. So just keep that in mind. The closer, the better. They look better that way.
So what would you suggest the spacing to be? A foot between each or a
18,
little more, a little less?
I think 18 inches. It depends a little bit on the variety. There's some that are really small, those little beady guys about 12 inches, and the ones that get to about 2 feet tall, they would be about 2 feet from each other when you plant them.
Wonderful. Thank you for being amazing. You are so appreciated. And, oh, by the way, let Miss Nicole know that she is appreciated as well.
I will tell
Thank
her that.
Thank you so much. You take good care. Have a good one.
Thank you, Phyllis. We'll see you soon. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Walter. Bye-bye.
A native Atlantan went to Inman Elementary, now Inman Middle School, Grady High School. There she is. I know exactly the neighborhood in which she grew up. Mike is out in McDonough, and Mike joins us. Say, Mike, good morning. Welcome to the Lawn and Garden.
Happy New Year almost.
Happy New Year, Michael. How can we help?
I have about 10 citrus trees that I bring into the garage in the winter, of course.
Yeah.
And I've rigged up as good lighting as I can, but I know it's not as good as the sunshine they're used to.
Yeah.
So my logic says if it's not getting as much light as they want, I'll do it longer. And so is it advantageous, to leave the lights on 24/7 to make up for the difference, or do they need some rest even if the light they're getting is substandard?
I will give you two acronyms. The first one is AMAP. The second one is ACAP. AMAP is as much as possible, and the ACAP is as close as possible. And to answer your specific question, Mike, no, do not put them on 24 hours because they do need a rest time. So I could go 18 maybe hours a day, but at least six of darkness or semi-darkness in your garage, I think would be better for them than to leave 24/7, because 24/7, they don't have time to recover from the stimulation that light gives them. And light, whatever levels you're able to give, is going to do some stimulation of the leaves to grow and the stems to elongate and various things that light does. And if you leave the lights on for 24/7, then you get these long, scraggly branches that, you know, go out 24 inches and flop over, and you don't want that.
I got you. Okay,
so how
well,
much light? I mean,
electric
just
bill as well.
Go to the hardware store. Just buy as many of those. You know, frankly, what I'm doing, Mike, in my sunroom where I have my Meyer Lemon, is I have 1, 2, 3, 4. I think it is aluminum round. I call them spotlights, but I'm sure there's another name for them. Shop lights, maybe is a better name. But aluminum round shop lights, real shiny inside, real shiny aluminum. And I screw 100-watt equivalent fluorescent CFL bulbs in there. And I keep them on for probably 16 hours a day, I guess. And even at that light level, even when it's really, really close, like 6 inches away from the plant, the lower leaves that are down low and don't get quite as much light, they fall off every year. And the leaves that are right up close to the light, they stay green, except for the spider mite infestation. But they stay pretty green and stay on the plant most of the winter.
I got you. Okay.
All right.
Well, I appreciate the advice, sir.
AMAP and ACAP. All right.
Happy New Year, sir.
Happy New Year, Michael. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
As much as possible when you bring a plant in, particularly citrus, simply because they're a plant that loves light. In order to make the orange or the lemon or the lime or the grapefruit or whatever they're making, where do citrus plants grow? They grow in Florida, they grow in California, they grow in Texas, they grow in places where the sun is shining bright and full on them. And bringing them indoors, even though you may have these spotlights, these shop lights, these whatever you have with the fluorescent bulbs in them, they're probably getting a tenth of the light level that they go at outside. A tenth. And a tenth is just not enough to really make them happy, but about 16 to 18 hours of light a day, as much as you can, as close as you can to the leaves. That's about the best most of us can accomplish if you don't have a greenhouse, I guess, outside to put them into. 404-872-0750 gets you in to take Michael's place. Jonathan is in Clarksville, and he joins us. Hey, Jonathan, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, man, what's up?
I want you to help save my river birches. I have a bunch of river birches around the creek near my house, and they're about a foot and a half in diameter, so they're big trees, and they're healthy and green and everything during the summers with leaves. Nothing wrong with them, and I've just started losing them. And they're hitting the ground, and I finally got around to, now that it's cooler, cutting one of them up, and there are these worms that are kind of off-white, about an inch and a half long, a little bit thicker than a pencil.
Yeah.
And they're I think it's called the cambium layer. They seem to be eating that, and the tree wood itself isn't, you know, rotten or anything. I mean, it's healthy as can be. It's just like the roots are just giving way, and they're just hitting the ground. And I'm wondering if there's something I can do, if it is the beetles that's killing, I mean, the worms that are killing it, if there's something I can put to maybe kill them, or what I can do.
I'll give you some homework to look up. There is an insect, a creature called the bronze birch borer. Bronze birch borer. And I don't have enough time right now to go look it up and see what its life cycle is, but it's possible. There are a number of boring creatures that have one life cycle. One part of the life cycle is the larval form, where they're right underneath the bark and they go around the cambium layer. And there are several insects like that that attack trees. So your job, I guess, Jonathan, is to look up bronze birch borer and see if that's what you have. Look up images on Google, of course. And if that is the case, getting an insecticide down underneath the bark sometimes is a tough proposition, and you're made a little bit tougher because you're there near the creek and you can't apply insecticides in the same way you would if it was way away from any water source in the middle of a landscape, and you don't have to worry about getting insecticide into the water. So my solution here is going to be give it all back to you and say look up bronze birch borer, and there should be some control methods that are delineated online about how to control it, but offhand I don't know what it's going to be.
Okay. Thank you so much, Walter. I appreciate your job you do for us. I listen every week.
Even though I'm not 100% accurate every time, I get close. At least I give you something to do and look for, Jonathan.
Absolutely.
Thanks for calling, man.
Thank you.
748-404-872-0750 gets you in to take Jonathan's place. We'll be back right after this.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. We'll be covering breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts through the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to Walter Reeves, the lawn and garden advice you need.
And a quick weather update brought to you by Ackerman Security. It's going to be about 50 degrees this afternoon, and the rain will gradually go in. Clouds moving in, of course, but first, and then the rain this afternoon, and some tomorrow, probably for New Year's Day. And don't forget, the overnight lows are in the mid-30s. Right now it's 36 degrees at News Talk WSB. And the full weekend forecast comes in 10 minutes on News 95.5 and News Talk WSB. People on the sunny side. Speaking of sunny, I found something very interesting this week. As some of you know, I have a semi-sort of maybe fascination with blue bottles, and I have blue bottle trees and blue bottle shrubs and a blue bottle vine in my back landscape. And when visitors come by and say, "Why you got all the blue bottles in your yard, Walter?" I make up some story about haints. You know what a haint is, right? A haint is a ghost, a mischievous ghost who does bad things to people in the garden. I say, "Well, you got to catch the haints to get in my garden, cause my tomatoes to have spots and my roses to not bloom like they ought to, and various things like that." So these blue bottles catch the haints. That's what I say to people. But I found there is a guy named, let's see, what was his name? Alfred Pleasanton, back in the mid-1800s, who became convinced that this color blue would actually help plants to grow. He said it stands to reason. Down in the tropics where the sky is blue all the time, that blue color is what causes the jungle plants to grow so rapidly. And so he made a greenhouse that had some blue panes in the top of the greenhouse. And sure enough, according to his tests, he got bigger and better vegetables and things that he was growing in his greenhouse. So I thought, well, we got to submit this to animal husbandry. And so he made a big barn with a clear roof and blue panes in the roof. And I have pictures of these pigs in the barn with blue all over their bodies. And he weighed the pigs before they went in. He weighed them when they came out. And lo and behold, the pigs were bigger than he really thought they should be. And so he published his findings and went to New York and spoke in front of the New York scientific societies up there and talking about the effect of blue light on plants and on animals. Sadly, when others tried to replicate his experiments with blue light on plants and animals, it wasn't quite the way it was. Nothing seemed to be effective in making the pigs grow better or the plants grow better, and blue light, certainly none of that. And so Alfred Pleasanton was put into the dustbin of history, I suppose we'd say. Alfred, his theories did not pan out. And that's the way it is with a lot of these over-the-counter garden recipes and things like that, some of which I get really aggravated with because of things like, mix tobacco juice and mouthwash and beer and things like that into a concoction and spray it on your lawn. It rejuvenates your lawn. Or use some of those materials to fertilize your tomato plants. Makes the tomato plants grow and make big tomatoes. Well, science isn't that way. Science, when it tries these concoctions of molasses and beer and mouthwash and things like that, doesn't find any effect at all. But people still continue to pass it on to each other. How you can use vinegar to control weeds permanently and 100% and all that kind of stuff. Science, my friends, is my friend. I do my best on this show to use examples and remedies and ways of dealing with problems that are based in science, based in a little bit of replication, some experience on my own. And I hope you'll do the same. Don't trust everything you hear over the fence. It may or may not be true, including blue bottles in your landscape catching the haints. At 7:58, we'll be back to more Lawn and Garden after news.